Hey, I think they're talking about money. That's what I gets the gist of what I got out of that. 720 WGN. Good evening, John Landecker. Thank you for joining us 9 minutes after nine. Talk about money. We welcome to the program again Herb, the consumer man, Weisbaum, contributing editor, checkbook.org. We're going to talk about new federal rules for debt collectors, holiday store return policies, and his Consumerpedia podcast. The first thing that popped into my head, I mean, we're going to talk about all those subjects.
Sure.
But debt, I would call them debt fishers. You know, people like to fish you on the internet, and
yes.
They're just is this also sort of sifted its way down into the debt collecting world?
Oh yeah, there are all kinds of bogus debt collectors, and just because someone calls you and claims that they are a debt collector, of course, does not mean they are a debt collector. So there's a lot. It's called phantom debt. They try to collect debt that really doesn't exist. But the other thing that's it's interesting and people need to know is that the feds, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, just changed the rules. After years and years and years, they finally just updated the rules of what debt collectors can and cannot do. You know, some of these rules were written like before there was even text messaging. So, you know, it's like, hey, guys, it was time we finally got around to doing something about this. And so there's rules that the good guys have to follow. And then there's the criminals who don't follow any rules whatsoever. And those are just you have to hang up and not deal. You have to just be smart enough to know that you're dealing with a criminal, which we can talk about as well. But the thing is, for real debt collectors, they're actually being a little bit more regulated than they were in the past, which is good for people who legitimately have a debt that has to be paid. Debt collectors have a job to do. They just have to follow the rules. And again, this hadn't been changed since 1977, the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. It was time to do an update.
So fill us in. What are the changes? What can we expect?
Well, the biggest change that got a lot of headline news is that they can now use social media, believe it or not, to contact you. And a lot of people just found that unbelievable that they could really do that. But they actually now can use social media to contact you as long as the information cannot be read by other people. I'm not smart enough about social media to know all about that stuff. But if they can do it in a way that they're not letting the whole world know you owe something to a debt collector, they can now contact you, make initial contact via social media. So that's one of the biggest changes of this whole thing.
Just a second. I agree totally with you. I mean, I'm not an expert on social media, except that I've always heard that if it goes on social media, it never goes away. And I don't know what safeguards debt collectors would put into, you know, to keep your information off of Facebook or Twitter or Instagram or whatever other means they can use now.
They can do direct messaging on social media. But the problem to me is we know that so many things that come on social media are scams.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why consumer groups are not really happy with the fact that the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau allowed them to do this, because I just think that's a whole bunch of problems. It used to be you know, they had to send you something in writing, but they are allowed to do that now. So just be aware of it. I would be incredibly skeptical of any contact that was made to me via social media from a debt collector, you know, unless you absolutely knew and recognized the name and said, fine, I'm not talking to you this way. Like, send me a written, you know, something in writing to let me know what's going on. That's one of the most troubling things about what was allowed here. With phone calls, the consumer groups were hoping they were going to limit the number of phone calls, and they didn't put a hard limit on the frequency of calls. But what they said was, if you make more than 7 attempts, we'll put that in quotes and explain that in a second. If you make more than 7 attempts to call the consumer within 7 consecutive days about a specific debt, we, the government, will presume that you're harassing them. So no more than 7 attempts in a 7-day period is basically the rule they're going to have to work under. An attempt includes those that were not answered or leaving a voicemail. So if they call Mr. Landecker and they get your voicemail, that is considered an attempt. So that's one of the 7 that they can make during the week. Now, if you happen to have 3 debts, let's say, and the same debt collector happens to have them, which could happen, they could make 21 calls to you in the course of the week, which is what consumer groups thought was too much. But the feds refused to do that. They also did say that a collector has to wait a week after speaking to you about a debt before calling again. So if they get through to you, John, and say, Mr. Landecker, here's fine, they have to wait a week until they call you again if you put them off or say you don't want to talk to them or whatever. But you do have the right to tell them to stop. You now have the right to tell them to stop any specific form of communication. And this is the biggest improvement for consumers. You can tell them no more phone calls or no more calls to my cell phone or no more text or no more email, whatever you tell, or none of the above. If you want none of the above, that's got to be done in writing. But any subdivision of that, you can do it over the phone. So you can say, you can call me at home, but don't call me on my cell. You can call me on my cell, but don't call me at home. You can text me, but don't call me. Whatever you want to do, any combination of that, you can now tell them and they must comply. So that's the biggest change, John, that's good for consumers in this whole thing.
Wow.
Yeah. And then the other thing that's really important for people to know is if somebody contacts you out of the blue and says you owe them a debt, tell them, I don't know who you are. I can't verify who you are over the phone. Send me information in writing. I want to see it in writing. Show me where it is, what I can do, because that way you can look at it. You can study it. By law, that piece of paper they send you has to explain your rights to say this isn't me or say this is wrong or something like that. So say, whoa, I'm not talking to you over the phone at all. You send me something in writing and I will take a look at it. And then we can talk after that fact. So that's a key thing for everybody to remember.
Wow. That's just unbelievable. Are there any
other? One other big thing, and this is that collectors, and believe it or not, some do this, and they're not allowed to do this, but they're clearly not allowed to do this now. They can't threaten to sue or take legal action against you for a debt that is past the statute of limitations. It's what they call time bar debt. So it's different in different states, but after a while, you know, just like crimes have a statute of limitations, debt has a statute of limitations, and it comes to the point where they can't collect it anymore. But in the old days, what they used to do is pressure you, say, oh, don't worry about it. Just pay a little bit, Mr. Weisbaum. Just, help us do something, make a little payment, start. Well, if you do that, in many cases, that restarts the clock and the whole statute of limitations starts all over again. Of course, nobody knows that, but that's why they were going to do that. So they are now no longer allowed to pressure you by saying we're going to sue you or take legal action against you for debt that is a time bar that is past the statute of limitations. So that's a really good thing as well.
Now, wait, though. I mean, eventually you're going to have to pay the debt, aren't you?
If the debt, believe it or not, the way the law works is if the debt is time barred, if you've passed the statute of limitations and they have not collected from you, you don't have to pay that debt. I mean, you have your conscience to live with. You bought something, you owed them the money. But by law, if you hit the statute of limitations, they can't collect from you anymore and you're not legally obligated to pay it anymore.
That's incredible. And you say that the statute of limitations varies from state to state?
Yes, unfortunately, I don't know what it is in Illinois, but it varies from state to state. But again, the key what they're trying to do is to get you to start the clock again, so that they have a lot more time to do that. So
where would one go, regardless of what state you live in, to find out what the statute of limitations is?
You know, that's an excellent question. Your state attorney general might know. I could try to find out for you and tell your amazing award-winning producer, Mr. Hush, and you can let people know that at a later date. But that's a good question. You asked me a stumper there, John.
Well, I mean, when you say there's a statute of limitations on debt, and if you surpass the statute of limitations, you don't have to pay the debt. That's a major statement. Yeah. I mean, that literally gets you out of anything if you know what the statute of limitations is. And, of course, you can live with your conscience.
Well, I just Googled for your state, for Illinois, and it says somewhere between 5 to 10 years. So that's the range we're talking about. So
yeah,
a year or a couple of days. It's a fairly long time.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that puts it in a little bit different light. But I suppose if you were really hardcore, you could pull that off, hypothetically.
You could. I mean, it's the same thing with bankruptcy. You know, we have a system in this country where at a point where you're allowed to get a fresh start and you're allowed to, you know, now if you don't pay off your debts and it's in collection, it shows up, you're not going to have any kind of credit score. Odds are you're never going to get credit again.
Yeah, that's true.
It's on your record that you didn't pay your bills.
So there is
it's not a legal penalty, but there is a penalty. You're going to be, I don't advise that. You did not hear that advice on the John Landecker show.
No. Well, let's move on to like holiday store return policies. What's that about? I mean, because, you know, people are going to, this happens now, well, not just at this time of year, but I would suppose that more often now than in other months, people get things and they want to return them.
Well, sure. There's holiday gift policies that are affecting me. The day after Christmas, everybody's going to start to return the presents. We just posted a story on checkbook.org for you tonight so I could talk about it.
Great.
And our friends at consumerworld.org do a survey every year of the major retailers to see if they're being naughty or nice. And they've done this for 18 years now. Most are being really, really nice. I mean, basically, the major retailers have very liberal return policies and they've extended holiday deadlines. They kept them as they did last year during the pandemic in order to make it easier for people to bring things back to the store. So for some items bought as early as October the 1st, you have until mid to late January to return them. So that's really, really nice. So you don't have to race back and fight the crowds if the stores are open on Sunday or Monday right after Christmas to bring things back. But in a couple of cases, the stores weren't quite so nice. So Home Depot, which doubled its holiday return policy last year to 180 days, cut it back to 90 days for items this year. Still very generous, but it wasn't as good as it was before. And Walmart shortened its return window by 2 weeks. So last year was 90-day holiday return period for most items, with purchases starting on October the 16th. This year, it begins November the 1st. But Walmart does do something that a few stores are doing. They offer free mail returns for online purchases. So that's really nice. So the key is, especially if you bought it online, check with a retailer and find out what the return policy is. Because sometimes if it's easier for you, you can bring it back to the store, a brick and mortar store. Sometimes if you'd rather have them pay for it, they will in certain cases. You know, Walmart will do this. Macy's will do this. Amazon does this in many cases. You know, if you bought it from Amazon, not one of their third-party retailers. So the key is these policies are on all the websites. Before you do something, check and make sure you know exactly what. And the final tip is, if it's a gift, if you got it as a gift, bring the gift receipt, hopefully, or get the gift receipt from the person who gave it to you. Because if you don't have a gift receipt that showed where and when it was purchased and how much, you know, with fraud going on these days, it's going to be a lot harder. And you may only get the lowest sale price it sold for in like the last 30 or 60 or 90 days, not what the person who gave it to you paid for it. So take back the gift receipt if you got it as a gift, or if you didn't get one, ask them, hey, I need to take this back. Do you have a receipt that I can take back with me? Because it's going to make your life a whole lot easier. And I go through all the rules and regulations and what all the stores are doing. If you go to checkbook.org, it's right there on the consumer notebook section, and you can read all about it. It's got links to all kinds of advice for people who are going to return things. Because sometimes, you know, John, those sweaters don't fit or they're just too ugly to even wear.
And how about a podcast? Let's get a plug in for the podcast.
Thank you. Thrilled with our new Consumerpedia podcast. We just did a half an hour interview with John Bennett, and he is one of the cyber criminals who actually started the whole internet way back when. And Brett Johnson. Brett Johnson. He started the internet crime way back when, spent 6.5 years in prison, and he talks about all the tricks that they used to scam us this day. I asked him how much money he made when he was a con artist, and he said, I didn't make any money, Herb. I stole it, millions of dollars, but I stole it all. You don't want to run into somebody like me on the internet. So it's a fascinating interview, consumerpedia.org. And thank you for letting me share that.
You bet. And thank you for being with us again. That's Herb the Consumer Man Weisbaum, who contributing editor to checkbook.org. Thanks for the tips and the information, and have a great holiday. And hope to talk to you again, Herb.
Thanks, John. All the best.